This is Audible.
My dearest Lady Bertram, sister, 11 long years have passed since we found ourselves last together at our father's house, and I am grateful beyond measure for the good fortune which has smiled upon you and
your dear husband, Sir Thomas. I regret with all my heart the loss of the once warm connection between us.
Lady Bertram's sister, Frances Price, had married unwisely. She had married for love.
As I prepare for the birth of my 9th child, I write to tell you that my beloved husband remains disabled from active service.
Indeed he was, yet still quite able to enjoy good company and strong liquor.
I ask that you might consider taking into your household one of my older children, who should, I am sure, prove quite useful to you. This would provide a mighty relief to me in the coming months, and I should remain forever in your debt. Yours most affectionately,
your sister Frances Price.
The breach between Frances Price and her two more respectably married sisters, Lady Bertram and Mrs. Norris, had remained constant since her marriage, which was neither approved nor successful. Now Frances found herself poor. Her children were poor, and she was eager to regain the family she had previously so carelessly sacrificed.
Sir Thomas, as to the matter of my sister, Mrs. Price...
It is certainly unfortunate to see a woman reduced to such a pitiful state.
It is a terrible thing to observe the effect of a willful nature upon a life which might have held such promise. Nine children is indeed a burden to bear, Mrs. Norris. Pug, no cream cakes today. You know how they disagree with you. What if we were, amongst us, to undertake the care of the eldest girl, Fanny?
A girl?
She is 9 years old. Just the age to require more attention than her poor mother could possibly give.
A girl, you say? Pug, do sit!
Well, a girl might be acceptable. A boy, however, would prove more useful to me in the West Indies, would he not?
But a girl would make a favourable companion.
Yes, that is true.
She would have much to learn.
And who better to teach her, Sir Thomas? Why, she would be blessed to be instructed by you as to all that is right and proper in the world.
It might be correct to offer the child an education. Indeed, I think myself resolved to be a real and consistent patron to the young person.
What generosity.
Let her make her home here, at Mansfield Park. We will endeavour to do our duty by her.
Indeed. I hope she will not tease my poor Pug. I've only just got Julia to leave her alone.
There will be some difficulty in our way as to the distinction proper to be made between the girls as they grow up, to make Fanny remember, without depressing her spirits too far, that she is not a Miss Bertram. Mm. I should wish to see them good friends, but they cannot be equals. Their rank, fortune, rights and expectations will always be different.
And so it is that all is soon agreed, and in no time at all, Fanny Price is removed from her home, her mother, and all that is of comfort to her in the world.
Fanny, I am Sir Thomas, your uncle.
I am very pleased to meet you, sir.
Whatever is the matter with you, girl? Are you ill?
I wonder, ma'am...
What is it?
When I am to see my mother.
You are to live with us now, Fanny. Did your mother not explain?
She told me I should be going on a long journey, sir.
Quite right. And now, with your arrival here at Mansfield Park, you are to begin a new life.
But shall I not see my mother? And my brother William again? My mother is to have a new baby.
And you would only be in the way, Fanny. You are a very fortunate girl indeed to be here with your uncle and aunt. Extremely fortunate.
This is our eldest son, Tom.
I don't believe you're almost 10, Fanny. Are all the children in Portsmouth as undersized as you?
Really, Tom?
And Edmund?
How are you, Fanny Price?
Mariah?
Fanny.
And finally, Julia.
Look at her clothes.
We're delighted to offer you a home and an education, Fanny. All we ask is that you work hard and do your duty.
I am sure in time you shall get used to us, Fanny, and we, no doubt, shall become accustomed to you.
It requires longer, however, than Mrs. Norris is inclined to allow for Fanny to be reconciled to Mansfield Park and the separation from her family. Her feelings are acute and too little understood to be properly attended to. The grandeur of the house astonishes, but cannot console her, and she spends the better part of her days sobbing quietly alone.
Oh, my dear little cousin, whatever can be the matter? Are you ill? Is somebody angry with you? I think you're sorry to leave your mamma. But you must remember, Fanny, that you are with relations who all love you and want to make you happy.
Don't you think me very ungrateful, Edmund?
I could never think that. Come, let us walk in the park and you shall tell me all about your brothers and sisters.
William did not like that I should come away. He said he should miss me very much indeed.
But your brother will write to you, Fanny.
He said to me that I must write first. But I have no paper.
Come with me into the breakfast room. We shall find pen, paper, everything we need. You could tell William all about us and...
The peacocks.
Yes. And maybe you should mention Pug and how she always eats the cushions when Mother's not in the room.
And the place where the nightingales nest.
From this day forward, Fanny has a friend. And the kindness of her cousin Edmund gives her better spirits with everyone else.
Aunt Norris, only think. Fanny cannot put the map of Europe together. She cannot tell the principal rivers in Russia. She has never even heard of Asia Minor.
Is this true, Fanny?
I do not always know the answers to certain questions.
By the age of 5, we could say by heart the order of the kings and queens of England and the dates of their successions.
Very true indeed, my dears, but you are blessed with wonderful memories, and your poor cousin Fanny here probably has none at all.
And do you know, Fanny says she does not want to learn music or drawing.
My dear child, that is the most stupid thing I've ever heard. A girl not learning music? What will you do when you're a woman, Fanny, if you cannot play the piano?
Such are the counsels by which Mrs. Norris assists to form her niece's minds. So it is hardly surprising that with all their promising talents, they should be entirely deficient in the less common acquirements of self-knowledge, generosity, and humility.
Julia, I forbid you to take my green shoes.
You cannot forbid me. Only Mamma can forbid me.
As to the education of her daughters, Lady Bertram pays not the smallest attention. She is a woman who spends her days sitting nicely dressed upon a sofa, thinking more of her pug than of her children. Before long, 5 years have passed, and Fanny is grown.
Tom!
You require my presence, sir?
I've been calling for you this last half hour.
Sir Thomas Bertram's eldest son and heir, Tom, is now a man. He has never suffered or learned to think, and although he can feel some sorrow over his losses at gambling and other pleasures, he consoles himself cheerfully that he is not half so much in debt as some of his friends.
Have you no sense of shame?
I do not understand you, sir.
Do you mean to make your younger brother Edmund pay for all your indulgences?
I mean nothing of the sort, father.
You know very well that Edmund has been promised a living at the parsonage.
Well, he will make a creditable clergyman, no doubt.
And you know also that my affairs have recently incurred considerable losses.
Such matters have forever undergone periods of loss and profit. Is it not the nature of the beast, father?
Would that you were interested enough, Tom, to understand the first thing about it. I have paid your debt. And the price has been Edmund's living. I cannot assist him now. You have robbed him of the position which was rightfully his. I despair of you, Tom.
Edmund? Thought you might be here.
Don't you think horses are the most patient of animals? Poor Charlie here listens to everything I say and nods and rubs his head on my shoulder, and all he wants for it is a carrot.
Perhaps I should try giving Aunt Norris a carrot and she might listen to me sometimes. Are you very sad?
No, really I'm not. I don't need Father to help me find a position. I'll easily find one myself when the time comes.
Of course you will. But it isn't fair.
Poor Fanny. You feel everyone's sorrows as deeply as your own.
Yes, but you've worked so hard, and Tom, well, he never works at all.
Tom will have Mansfield Park one day. It's a great weight to carry.
Are things very serious? Please tell me. I know there's something wrong.
Why can I speak so openly with you, Fanny, when I cannot do so, would not dare to do so with my mother or sisters?
That's simple, because we are friends.
My father is going to the West Indies soon. He has not spoken to me, but I know there must be a problem, quite a serious problem, if he cannot afford to secure a position for me.
He has lost his money.
My father is a sensible man. He will not have all of his assets in one place, but yes, I think it is very serious indeed.
I have lived before with very little money.
But you are strong, Fanny. Think of Mother. Think of my sisters. If they did not have 2 dozen pairs of shoes to choose between them, they would not think it possible to leave the house.
Well, it is always necessary for a lady to have a suitable hat for every occasion.
Men and women are afraid to lose their position in society.
If position is denoted by a lady's choice of hat, I'd rather be a horse.
We are the best of friends, are we not, Fanny Price?
Yes. The best of friends.
Come on, brother! What's the matter with you? You're riding like a girl! No, not like that. Like a man on a donkey!
Tom! For pity's sake, what's your intention, to kill yourself?
I might as well. Antigua! God have mercy on me! Why is it I must go with Father? Why can he not have sent me to hell or deliver me into the hands of bandits? At least my death would have been quick.
He wants you with him to assist him with his work.
No, I think not. No. Rather, he does not want me here.
You might find it interesting once you get there.
You, brother, might indeed find something of interest, but I would rather live, breathe, drink, for pity's sake. And that's why he's done it. To crush the very life out of me. Well, he won't succeed. Ah!
Tom!
Oh, Sir Thomas, 6 months, a whole winter and spring shall pass before we are reunited.
I shall bring you back your son just as soon as our business is completed. Oh. Now try not to concern yourself, my dear. All will be well.
And Tom, do be careful and pay great attention to your health.
Yes, 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 I will, Mama.
Goodbye, Father.
I'm leaving the care of the family and the estate in your hands, Edmund.
Do not be concerned, Father. I shall take care of everything.
Julia.
Father.
Mariah.
Father, might you perhaps bring me back a shawl?
I am sure we shall find you some gifts.
A shawl would certainly assist an old widow such as myself in the long winter nights.
You hear that, Tom? We must not forget a nice shawl for Mrs. Norris also. Goodbye, Fanny.
Goodbye, sir.
The family return, one by one, to the house. Only Edmund and Fanny remain until the carriage is no more than a speck upon the horizon. They sense something which has gone quite unnoticed by the rest of the family. Change is pressing down upon them, as surely as the coming winter, and Fanny wonders, as she gazes out across the land, what the nature of her destiny will be. It is winter in Mansfield Park. On the other side of the world, Sir Thomas Bertram and his eldest son Tom are in Antigua, trying to rescue the family fortune. But here, in the county of Northamptonshire, Mrs. Norris has more important things on her mind. She is engaged in promoting the gaieties of Fanny's cousins, displaying their accomplishments, and looking about for their future husbands.
Miss Bertram. Miss Julia. We're very delighted to see you, I'm sure.
The Miss Bertrams are indeed now fully established as the belles of the neighbourhood.
Might I ask you to reserve for me the first of your dances tonight?
Their vanity is in such good order that they seem to be quite free of it.
My dear Miss Bertram, is not the evening quite chilly? Indeed, frosty, but not inclement.
Maria is engaged to Mr. Rushworth.
Mr. Rushworth, are you not dancing?
Perhaps. Later. Yes. My dancing, you see, I do not excel at dancing.
Oh.
Although I am tolerable. Not bad, you understand, but without the flair, shall we say, that some possess.
Mr. Rushworth is all that Mrs. Norris might desire for her eldest charge. Heavy, with not more than common sense. A marriage to Mr. Rushworth would provide Maria with an income larger than her father's, and a house in town.
Will you not speak with my sister, Mr. Rushworth, while I fulfil my obligations for the first dance?
Of course.
And what of Fanny? She is to have no share in the festivities of the season. Instead, her duty is to be useful as her aunt's companion, reading to her and attending to her needs.
Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove. Oh no, it is an ever-fixed mark that looks on tempests and is never shaken.
By the summer of that year, Fanny is 18, and the society of the village receives an addition in the persons of Henry Crawford and his sister Mary.
How delightful of our new neighbours to invite us to dinner.
A family of such consequence right here upon our doorstep is a very convenient thing indeed.
Goodness me, what a house.
And rumour has it there's a young man destined to inherit that house and the estate, not to mention his father's title.
It is always sociable to meet new people, is it not?
Miss Crawford is glad to find a family of such property so very nearby. Matrimony is her object, provided she can marry well.
The youngest Miss Bertram, I believe, is a nice, handsome, accomplished girl. Knowing how you love to flirt, I am quite sure she will not be safe from your attentions.
Please, Mary, just because I'm of a cautious temper and I'm willing to rush my happiness, there is no need to be so unkind. No one can think as highly of the matrimonial state as myself.
The young Bertrams and the Crawfords are pleased with each other from the start. Mr. Crawford is a gentleman with a pleasing address, and Miss Crawford, beautiful, without a doubt.
I like these Miss Bertrams exceedingly, sister.
I am delighted to hear it, Henry, but you like Julia best.
Miss Maria Bertram is undoubtedly the handsomest.
But Miss Maria Bertram is engaged. Remember that, my dear brother. Her choice is made. It is a great match for her.
But Miss Maria Bertram does not care three straws for Rushworth. What of the illustrious Tom Bertram?
I'm sure I do not know.
Have you not your own aspirations regarding this most desirable family?
It is every woman's duty to marry well.
Duty, indeed.
One which we women take perhaps more seriously than you men.
You think we men know nothing of duty? What of the duty to our hearts?
My dear Mr. Crawford.
Miss Julia.
Do you not like to dance? You've been sitting here quite still all evening.
Alas, Miss Julia, I wished only to dance with you.
With me?
And finding the courage to request the pleasure was quite beyond me. You are the most beautiful woman in the room. However could I hope that you might include my name upon what must be already an oversubscribed list?
I shall do my best to find a moment for you, Mr. Crawford.
I am in your debt.
It is only a matter of time before you too fall under the spell of a woman.
To be spellbound, certainly. But to marry, I think not.
I do believe, brother, that there is not one in 100 of either sex that are not duped when they wed. It is, of all the transactions, the one in which people expect the most of others and are least honest themselves.
Thank you. What do you think of our new neighbours, Fanny?
She is very beautiful.
Miss Crawford. Yes. And her brother seems a pleasant enough fellow.
Have you seen how he watches Maria?
Maria? Yes, of course. She's about to sing, is she not?
I believe your elder brother has left you for a time, Mr. Bertram.
He is attending to my father's affairs abroad, Miss Crawford.
Eldest sons are of particular interest to Miss Crawford. A woman who knows how to appreciate social position and wealth.
A wide experience of life is to be applauded in a gentleman, and especially in a gentleman who is destined to inherit such an estate as Mansfield Park.
And what of Fanny Price? Fanny, who is without power, influence, or position. She watches from a distance as her cousin Edmund and Mary Crawford walk together in the gardens before the house.
I begin now, Mr. Bertram, to understand you all. Except, perhaps, Miss Price.
They look across the lawn to where Fanny sits with her Aunt Bertram, as Pug blinks lazily in the sunshine.
Fanny is her own woman?
Hardly a woman, yet. In a year or two, yes. She will be lovely, I'm quite sure.
Do you ride, Miss Crawford?
I have never been upon a horse in my life.
But that is a terrible state of affairs. We have horses here. I shall teach you.
I suspect I shall be an immensely irritable and ungrateful pupil.
Then I shall be a positive monster of a tutor.
I had a French tutor many years ago. He used to grind his teeth when I made mistakes.
What a fool you must have been.
And why is that?
I cannot imagine anyone becoming angry with you.
How very kind you are, Mr. Bertram.
I wish you could see Compton, Mrs. Norris. I never saw a place so altered in my life. The approach now is one of the finest in the country. I declare, when I got back to Southerton yesterday, it looked like a prison. Quite a dismal old prison.
Oh, Mr. Rushworth, a prison indeed. Southerton Court is the noblest place in the world.
It wants improvement, ma'am. I never saw a place that wanted so much improvement in my life.
If I had anything within the 50th part the size of Southerton, I should always be planting and improving. It was only the spring 12-month before Mr. Norris's death that we put in the apricot against the stable wall, which has grown into such a noble...
Mr. Rushworth, if I were you, I should contrive to have a very pretty shrubbery at Southerton. In good weather, one likes to get out in a shrubbery.
At Compton, they have cut down some fine old trees. It opens the prospect amazingly. I would certainly like to have the avenue at Southerton down.
Cut down the avenue? What a pity that would be, to cut down lovely trees is a sad thing indeed.
I'm afraid the avenue stands a bad chance, Fanny.
I should like to see Southerton before the trees are gone.
You've never been there? What a pity.
Mr. Bertram, I have tidings of my harp at last. I am assured it is safe at Northampton, but how do you think it is to be conveyed? Not by a wagon or cart. Oh, no, nothing of that kind could be hired in the village.
You would find it difficult, I dare say, just now, Miss Crawford, in the middle of a very late harvest.
I was astonished to find what a piece of work was made of it. And now it seems by the very act of simply asking, I have offended all the farmers and half the hay in the parish.
You could not have been expected to have thought on the subject before, but in harvest it is well beyond any farmer's power to spare even a horse.
I shall understand your ways in time, but coming down with the true London maxim that everything is to be got with money, I was a little embarrassed at first by the sturdy independence of your country customs.
The harp is my favourite instrument, Miss Crawford. I do hope I shall be allowed to hear you play.
I shall be delighted. And, Mr. Bertram, if you write to your brother in the West Indies, I entreat you to tell him that my harp is come, and I look forward to playing it for him on his return.
If I write, I shall say whatever you wish of me. But I do not at present foresee any occasion for writing.
What strange creatures brothers are. You have but one style of writing among you. Oh, I know it perfectly. Henry, who is in every other respect exactly what a brother should be and will talk to me by the hour, has never yet turned the page in a letter. And often it is nothing more than, Dear Mary, I am just arrived, bath seems full and everything as usual. Yours sincerely.
When they are at a distance from all their family, brothers can write long letters.
Miss Price has a brother at sea. Do you know his captain, Miss Crawford? Captain Marshall?
We know very little of the inferior ranks. Captains may be very good men, but they do not belong to us.
Perhaps, Mr. Crawford, you would do me the honour of coming over to Southerton and giving me your opinion on the improvement.
I should be delighted to be of service.
Then why do we not make up a party? Mr. Crawford would take my two nieces and me in his barouche. Edmund can go on horseback, and Sister Fanny will stay at home with you.
But Fanny should come with us, for she particularly should like to see the estate.
Indeed. Yes. A trip to Southerton for all of us.
Oh! That's a good idea.
A young woman such as Miss Crawford
pretty, with a harp as elegant as herself, and both placed near a window opening onto a little lawn, surrounded by shrubs in the rich foliage of summer, is enough to steal any man's heart. By the end of a week, Edmund is beginning to be a good deal in love.
I cannot believe that you have only this week set yourself upon a horse for the first time, Miss Crawford.
I can hardly believe it myself, Mr. Bertram.
But are you not tired?
I am very strong. Nothing ever fatigues me but doing what I do not like.
Fanny, there you are. I've been looking everywhere for you. Ah, you are watching Miss Crawford riding with Edmund.
They are a little late returning, Aunt.
Surely you would not begrudge them their pleasure. What a fine couple they make.
My dear Miss Price, I am come to make my own apologies for keeping you waiting for your horse.
I'm quite sure Fanny doesn't mind. Do you, Fanny?
No, indeed.
I have nothing in the world to say for myself, Miss Price. I knew it was very late, and I was behaving very ill. And therefore, if you please, you must forgive me.
And so it is that Mary Crawford continues to ride daily with Edmund, while Fanny is forced to withstand the company of her two aunts.
Fanny, are you idling your day upon the sofa? If you have no work of your own, I can supply you with the poor basket. I'm sure I've almost broke my back cutting out this new calico. You should learn to think of other people. And take my word for it, it is a shocking trick for a young person to be always lolling upon a sofa.
Her work completed, Fanny goes out. She looks down to the land beyond the parsonage, and there she sees them. Edmund and Mary Crawford on horseback, riding side by side. Edmund is close to Mary, speaking to her, directing the management of the bridle, holding Miss Crawford's hand.
Come, Miss Crawford. Let us ride as far as the stream, and I shall show you where the nightingale builds her nest every year.
All that was once reserved for Fanny's unique friendship with her cousin is now gone, given seamlessly, easily to another. She wonders at her own pain as she watches her Edmund and his newfound companion delight in each other's company. Maria Bertram is engaged to Mr. Rushworth. The day of the much-anticipated visit to his estate at Southerton has arrived. Maria and her sister Julia are chiefly enthusiastic because it offers them the opportunity of passing a day in the company of Henry Crawford.
Maria! Julia! Do hurry along, we shall be late!
I hope the avenue lives up to your expectations, Fanny.
It was very kind of you to make it possible for me to come.
Not kind, selfish. How could we all enjoy ourselves if you were not with us?
Oh, Miss Crawford, what a becoming dress.
Thank you, Mrs. Norris.
Since the arrival of Mary Crawford, Fanny has seen little of Edmund. She feels the loss keenly.
Come along, Maria! Hug home. Hug! Back in the house! Oh.
The place of all places, upon the barouche box, the envied position, that of the treasured seat beside Mr. Crawford, is as yet unappropriated. To whose happy lot is it to fall?
Whatever is keeping you girls?
While each of the Miss Bertrams are meditating on how best to secure it, Mrs. Norris proclaims,
Julia, I think it will be a good opportunity for you to take a lesson in driving from Mr. Crawford. Why do you not take a seat beside him?
I think I will.
Happy Julia. Unhappy Maria. Julia is on the barouche box in a moment.
I am delighted to see you here with us today, Miss Price.
Thank you. I have never travelled so far from Mansfield Park in my life.
And there is so much to see.
Goodbye!
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 Where is Edmund?
I believe he is just behind us. He rides extremely well, does he not?
Indeed. He taught me to ride when I was a child.
He is tutor to us both, then.
Upon the barouche box, all is merriment between Julia and Henry Crawford.
My dear Miss Bertram, would I tell you an untruth?
Our coachman Duffy simply would not go up a hill in Sligo without singing a hymn and insisting we all join in.
I do not believe you, Mr. Crawford.
I tell you, I speak as one who has sung his way all over Ireland. And there must be something in old Duffy's rituals, for upon my word, we never lost a wheel or had a horse go lame yet.
And do you always do as you are bidden, Mr. Crawford?
Indeed I do. And now we must sing. If we are to ward off misfortune, or what would Mr. Duffy say?
Sing! On a barouche box.
Where better? The beau who's so smart with his well-powdered hair, an angel he holds in his glass, and things with grimace to subdue an affair may justly be reckoned an ass may justly be reckoned an ass. Then let us companions be jovial and gay by turn take the bottle and glass. For he who is present...
Miss Julia seems in high spirits.
Yes, indeed. My younger sister is minded to get quite overexcited in social situations. She's still really but a girl.
Julia! Do be careful!
I am!
Mr. Crawford, do see that Julia comes to no harm.
Depend upon it, madam. I shall ensure that Miss Julia arrives at Southerton quite alive and in good health.
As the carriage nears the estate, Maria is assaulted by contradictory emotions. She has Rushworth feelings, and she has Crawford feelings. But with her ego bolstered by the consequence and grandeur of the property, she cannot resist but to bathe in the reflected consequence of Mr. Rushworth and all that he possesses.
This is Mr. Rushworth's property, I believe, now, on each side of the road.
How extremely impressive. Do you not agree, Miss Price?
Indeed I do.
Mariah's spirits are in as happy a flutter as vanity and pride will furnish as they drive up to the spacious stone steps of the great house.
Ladies! Ladies! You are most welcome indeed. Later we must dine, but first, a tour of the house.
A tour of the house is indeed undertaken, and having visited many more rooms than could be supposed to be of any other use than to contribute to the window tax and find employment for housemaids...
Now, we're coming to the chapel, which probably we ought to enter from above and look down upon. But as we're quite among friends, I will take you this way.
It is excellent, is it not, to feel the whole history of a family, of its traditions and rituals reflected in such a fine place?
Prayers were always read here by the domestic chaplain, morning and night, but my father left it off.
Every generation has its improvements.
You must agree, Miss Crawford, that there is comfort to be found in a joining together of those we love, in the re-establishing of what we hold to be valuable and true.
Cannot you imagine with what unwilling feelings the former bells of the House of Rushworth did many a time repair to this chapel? All starched up into seeming piety, but with heads full of something very different, especially if the poor chaplain were not worth looking at.
Do look at Mr. Rushworth and Maria, Mr. Crawford, standing there side by side before the altar, exactly as if their marriage were about to be performed.
Mr. Crawford smiles and steps forward to Maria, saying in a voice that only she can hear,
I do not like to see you standing so near the altar as if about to be wed.
Would you not give me away, Mr. Crawford?
I am afraid I should do it very awkwardly.
My dear Edmund, if you were but in orders now, you might perform the ceremony directly.
Ordained? Are you to be a clergyman?
I shall take orders at Christmas time, Miss Crawford.
Oh, if I had known this before, I would have spoken of the cloth with more respect.
Ladies, we shall not have time for what is to be done out of doors. Oh. It is past two and we are to dine at five.
Oh, fine.
A considerable flight of steps leads the entire party into a planted wood of about 2 acres, chiefly larch, laurel, and beech cut down, all darkness, shade, and beauty.
So you are to be a clergyman, Mr. Bertram. This is rather a surprise to me. There is generally an uncle or a grandfather to leave a fortune to the second son.
I'm one of the exceptions and must do something for myself.
But why a clergyman? What is to be done in the church? Men love to distinguish themselves. A clergyman is nothing.
Miss Crawford, how can you say such a thing?
I cannot call that situation nothing which has the charge of all that is of the first importance to mankind.
How can 2 sermons every 7 days, even supposing them to be worth hearing, govern the conduct of a large congregation for the rest of the week?
A fine preacher is followed and admired, but it is not in fine preaching alone that a good clergyman will be useful. It is his private character.
One may only teach from the example of one's own life.
You're quite convinced, Miss Price, already.
I wish I could convince Miss Crawford, too.
Come, do change your mind. It is not too late. Go into the law.
The law? With as much ease as I would go into this wilderness. Funny, how thoughtless I've been here. Lean upon me. Perhaps, Miss Crawford, you would do me the honour of taking my other arm.
Thank you, but I'm not at all tired.
She takes his arm all the same, and the feeling of such a connection for the first time makes Edmund just a little forgetful of Fanny.
Oh, he must have walked at least a mile in this wood.
Do you think it is such a distance?
I think it's not half a mile.
You do not consider how much we have wound about.
But if you remember, before we left the first great path, we saw directly the end of it. It could not have been more than a furlong in length.
Oh, I know nothing of your furlongs, but I'm sure it is a very long wood indeed.
Miss Crawford, if you will but look up...
He reasons with her, but in vain. She will not calculate, she will not compare. The greatest degree of rational consistency could not be more engaging to him. Slowly, Edmund and Mary Crawford make their way further into the wood.
Miss Price, so solitary.
Mr. Crawford, Maria.
Miss Bertram.
Shall we pass through this gate and cross the meadow? I'm quite ready to leave this shady place. Do you not agree, Mr. Crawford?
Why, yes. But I have not brought the key. The gate remains locked, you see. What a pity. I shall never come out without the key again.
I would so much like to enjoy such a rewarding view of the house.
Indeed, Miss Bertram. I believe that is just the thing. Then I shall go and fetch the key directly. I will not be long, Miss Bertram.
How kind. What is your opinion of Southerton, Mr. Crawford?
I do not think that I shall ever see Southerton again with so much pleasure as I do today.
You seem to enjoy your drive here very much this morning. You and Julia were laughing all the way.
Yes, I believe we were. I was relating to her ridiculous stories of an old Irish coachman I used to know. Your sister loves to laugh.
You think her more light-hearted than I am?
More easily amused. I could not have hoped to entertain you with anecdotes.
It will take Mr. Rushworth so long to fetch the key.
Well, I think you might pass round the edge of the gate here with my assistance if you really wanted to be more at large, and I'm sure Miss Price will be good enough to tell Mr. Rushworth that he'll find us at the Knoll. Oh,
yes. But, Maria, will you not wait for Mr. Rushworth?
Fanny's cousin, however, is already safely upon the other side.
Fanny, wherever are the others? I thought Maria and Mr. Crawford were with you.
They have ventured over the gate towards the Knoll.
Why, so they have. Well, if Maria can do it.
But Julia, Mr. Rushworth will be here in a moment with the key.
Oh, I've had enough of that family for one day. Why, I've only just this minute escaped from his horrible mother. Oh!
And she scrambles over the fence. And walks away, leaving Fanny behind her.
Mr. Rushworth... My cousin Maria charged me to say that you'd find him at the Knoll.
I do not believe I shall go any further. By the time I get there, they may well have gone somewhere else.
I am very sorry.
Pray, Miss Price, are you such a great admirer of Mr. Crawford as some people are?
I do not think him at all handsome.
Nobody can call such an undersized man handsome. Why, he's not 5'9".
No, indeed.
In my opinion, these Crawfords are no addition at all. We did very well without them. I went the very moment she said she wanted the key.
Nothing could be more obliging than your manner. You have a beautiful estate, Mr. Rushworth. It does a man honour to care for and protect such a place for the generations to come.
You are too kind, Miss Price. I try my best. Always searching for useful improvements.
The oak trees, for instance, have endured so many years. Why, they might have seen Queen Elizabeth ride by, and the stars, which have been born and died since they first made their way up through the soil.
You make me think of them as people, Miss Price.
They're the sort of people we should strive to be, Mr. Rushworth.
constant souls with their feet planted firmly in the earth and their great heads lost in the heavens.
You have cheered my heart, Miss Price.
It is a pity you should not join Maria and Mr. Crawford.
Well, if you really think I had better go, it would be foolish to bring the key for nothing.
Mr. Rushworth lets himself through the gate and walks off without further ceremony. Fanny is alone once again, quite forgotten by Edmund and Mary Crawford. Dinner is followed by tea and coffee, but a 10-mile drive home allows no waste of hours.
Well, Fanny, this has been a fine day for you, upon my word.
Yes, Aunt.
Nothing but pleasure from beginning to end.
I think you have done well for yourself, ma'am. Your lap seems full of good things.
It is nothing, Maria, but four of those beautiful pheasant's eggs, which Mrs. Whittaker quite forced upon me. I shall get the dairymaid to set them under the first spare hen, and if they come to the good, I can borrow a coop, and attending them will be a delight to me in my lonely hours.
It is a beautiful evening, warm and still. Soon a silence falls upon the carriage. Fanny senses that in the course of a single day, each member of the party has been touched by the undeniable hand of change. As Mary Crawford glances from time to time out into the coming night, Fanny knows it is for Edmund she is searching. Edmund, Fanny's cousin, her protector, her dearest and most valued friend. Sir Thomas Bertram was expected to arrive back in England in November. His daughter, Maria, was indeed to be pitied, for the return of her father would also mean her marriage to Mr. Rushworth.
My mother bids me bind my...
Do you not think, Fanny, that Miss Crawford sings well?
Indeed, she is very accomplished.
And you have not heard her play her harp yet?
I have not had that pleasure.
She has a great sensitivity and... warmth.
My dear brother, Fanny, you see a man before you who hardly knows what to do with himself. Food, drink, the company of ladies, a piano, quite overwhelming after one's been living, well, my only described as a mud hut for the last 6 months.
You're exaggerating, Tom.
On the contrary, you should try it sometime. It's a life fit only for elephants. You must be big, thick-skinned, require little in the way of stimulation, and enjoy nothing better than to spend your days standing under a relentless sun, being fried alive.
We do not object to father leading such a life, considering it pays for all that we possess.
Oh, father loves it. He likes nothing better than to sweat and organise matters and get his boots dirty and go into fields rubbing leaves between his fingers and sniffing them in that knowing way.
I should have liked to have gone to Antigua. Mm.
Then please, please offer to take my place should I ever have to do so again. I see your Miss Crawford has a good voice.
She's hardly my Miss Crawford.
Indeed?
I can assure you, Tom.
There is no need to assure me of anything. A beautiful woman is singing. Do you not think we should be silent and simply gaze upon her in awe?
Fanny watches as Edmund is drawn slowly towards Mary Crawford until he stands enraptured by her side.
What did I tell you, Fanny? I think Miss Crawford has made an impression on my brother's heart. Are not all men essentially the same?
I feel certain they are not.
When you're older, Fanny, you shall see that I'm right.
Is all wisdom merely an attribute of age?
Do not be so serious, Fanny. I ask you but to stand back and smile as stiff-backed, straight-laced Edmund Bertram comes undeniably under the power of a woman.
The time spent with his father in the West Indies has done nothing to curb Tom Bertram's gambling or undesirable habits.
Lady Bertram, how delightful a home is Mansfield Park.
Oh, how very kind. Park, do not eat the cream. You know how it affects you.
Tom Bertram's friend, the Honourable John Yates, has joined him at Mansfield Park. He has not much to recommend him beyond his habits of fashion and expense.
I come to you on the wings of disappointment, ladies, For at Ecclesford we were in the process of preparing some private theatricals when the old dowager died.
Theatricals?
Mm. What was to be the play, Mr. Yates?
Lover's Vows, Miss Bertram.
Indeed.
I heard that was a rather daring text, Miss Yates.
It has received many performances in London, Miss Julia. Oh. But alas, my ambitions were to be entirely thwarted at the last moment.
What a shame.
Right, right. Well, I do not see, Yates, why we should not undertake a little performance of the play ourselves.
Lover's Vows. Yes. I should be happy to participate, Mr. Bertram.
Mr. Crawford.
I am very fond of theatricals.
We must have a curtain, a few yards of green beige.
A side wing, or two, perhaps. Three or four scenes to let down.
Of course.
Let us do nothing by halves. If we are to act, let it be in a theatre, completely fitted up with pit boxes and gallery. If we do not outdo Ecclesford, we do nothing.
Now, Edmund, do not be so disagreeable.
What is the matter? I was not asleep.
Oh, no, dear mother. No one suspected you.
I'm convinced my father would not approve.
Well, I am convinced to the contrary. How many times are we to be or not to be in this very room? I know my father as well as you do, Edmund. You manage your own concerns and I'll take care of the rest of the family.
Edmund, I do not understand entirely why you feel so strongly about this. Naturally, all must be done correctly.
You obviously do not know the play, then, Fanny. It is quite improper. And it would all be very imprudent, I think, with regard to Maria. She is engaged to Rushworth, and such a situation with Crawford. I fear for the consequences. I shall speak to my sisters and try to dissuade them.
My dear Edmund, I can perhaps see that Maria's situation might require particular delicacy, but I am engaged to no one, and I can see no harm in participating in a play which is done in so many respectable families.
But
my engagement to Mr. Rushworth is certainly no impediment to my taking part. I simply do not know what you mean.
Mr. Crawford.
My sister desires her love and hopes to be admitted to the company and will be happy to take the part of any old woman that you may not like to do yourself.
Oh.
Maria gives Edmund a glance, as if to say, "What say you now? Can we be wrong if Mary Crawford feels the same?" The scheme advances, and opposition is in vain.
Now, as to the characters which must be allocated, there are capital tragic parts for Yates and Crawford, there's the rhyming butler for me, and as for the rest, they may be filled up by anybody.
Of course. Excellent.
I should be happy to take either part.
As should I, Crawford.
Whatever you do not choose, Mr. Yates, shall satisfy me.
Perhaps this is a point where height and figure might be considered.
Miss Bertram?
Your being the tallest, Mr. Yates, suggests that you would make a perfect baron.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Maria cleverly contrives to cast Henry Crawford as Frederick, for she would certainly play opposite him as Agatha.
And what of Rushworth?
I should certainly be delighted.
I'm sure Mr. Rushworth will be happy to take any part given.
Yes, well, naturally.
But there are not enough women. Amelia and Agatha may do for Maria and me, but there is nothing for your sister, Mr. Crawford.
Oh, I'm certain my sister would not wish to act unless she proved useful.
Oh, but the part of Amelia belongs to Miss Crawford. I mean, it falls as naturally to her as Agatha does to one or other of my sisters.
Each sister looks anxious, each feeling the best claim to Agatha and hoping to have it pressed upon her by the rest. To be Agatha is to play the part of Mr. Crawford's lover, to be the object of his undivided attention on stage, to be the recipient of his longing looks and passionate declarations.
But, Miss Julia, I entreat you not to take the part of Agatha. I could not stand your countenance dressed up in woe and paleness.
It is pleasantly spoken, but Julia sees at a glance that Maria is preferred.
Oh, yes, yes, Maria must be Agatha. Maria will be the best Agatha. Julia had better do the cottager's wife.
Oh. The cottager's wife? What are you talking of? The most trivial, paltry, insignificant part.
But we cannot have two Agathas, and we must have one cottager's wife.
Julia must be Amelia. She is the most difficult character in the whole piece. It requires great delicacy of feeling. A gentlewoman. Julia Bertram.
No. She would not like it. She's too tall and robust. Oh. Amelia should be a small, light, girlish, skipping figure. It's fit only for Miss Crawford.
But do not be afraid of my wanting the character. If I'm not to be Agatha, I'm sure I will do nothing at all. And as to Amelia, it's all the parts in the world, the one most disgusting to me. An odious little pert, unnatural, impudent girl.
Well, you heard what she said. She's made a decision. Now, let us get on. There is much to do.
Julia? Julia, are you there?
It is very dark to be sitting here all alone.
Oh, Fanny, I wish there'd never been a play.
You mustn't mind them.
I'm trying not to.
I'm sorry the idea of theatricals ever arose. I'm sure it will end badly.
It's just he so wanted Mariah to play the part. Mr. Crawford. He so did not want me to be his lover.
It is his loss. That is how you must view it.
Yes. Yes, of course. I am very occupied just now in any case. I have many commitments which require my attention.
My dear Mrs. Norris, I am to be Count Castle, and I'm to come in first in a blue costume and a pink satin cloak, and afterwards I am to have another fancy suit. I do not know how I shall like it.
We must get to work immediately. Fanny, fetch my sewing basket.
Oh. We have finally agreed upon our parts, Miss Price.
Do you really think that this play is suitable, Mr. Yates?
But of course.
Forgive me, but I understood the story to be one of a delicate nature.
The play concerns an illegitimate son, does it not? And women sorely treated by their men.
It is a drama, Mr. Bertram. And certainly a powerful one at that.
And who will take the parts of the women?
I take the part which Lady Ravenshaw was to have done, and Miss Crawford is to be Amelia.
I come in 3 times and have 42 speeches.
This velvet will do nicely for the waistcoat, yeah. Mr. Rushworth, with some little silver buttons, I think.
I do not consider that this play is suitable, and there is still time to make another choice.
No, Mr. Rushworth, moment of the light from the window.
Yes, I'm coming, Mrs. Norris.
Mariah, I tell you that I think this play is exceedingly unfit for presentation.
I see nothing objectionable in it. Oh, Miss Crawford, you see, our little theatre is emerging.
Cottages and alehouses inside and out. Most impressive.
But pray, who was to play Anolt? What gentleman am I to have the pleasure of making love to?
I should be happy to take the part, but unluckily the butler and Anolt are on together.
So. Oh.
Then Edmund should play the part.
I think Mr. Bertram does not act. But tell me, sir, what is your advice?
My advice is to change the play.
And Fanny, you must be the cottager's wife.
Me? Indeed, you must excuse me.
Are you afraid of 6 speeches? What would you do with a part such as mine? I have 42 to learn.
But I cannot act.
Well, you can act well enough for us.
I do not wish to act. I am quite ashamed of you, Fanny, to make such a difficulty of obliging your cousins. It is very ungrateful indeed, considering who and what you are.
Edmund is too angry with Mrs. Norris to speak, but Mary Crawford looks with astonished eyes at her and moves away.
My dear Miss Price, this is a cross day. Do not let us mind them.
And as to Anolt, I could name at least 6 young men within 10 miles of us who are wild to be admitted into our company. Charles Maddox, perhaps?
As far as I am concerned, I have no objection to anyone you all think eligible.
They have chosen almost as bad a play as they could, and now they want to invite young men we hardly know to join the company.
But what can be done, Edmund?
There is but one thing to be done. I must play the part of Anolt myself. Put yourself in Miss Crawford's place. Consider what it would be like to act scenes of such passion with a stranger.
You are beautiful, Miss Wilderness. Upon
you
my...
You said Wilderness, Rushworth.
Did I? I do apologise. Miss Wildenheim, upon my word...
Honour...
I beg your pardon?
Upon my honour, I think so.
Yes. Upon my honour, I think so, for I am the epitome of the world. I have learnt delicacy in Spain.
Italy.
Might we rest?
I think I can remember it, Miss Crawford.
Fanny is a courteous listener, but Mr. Yates rants dreadfully.
Go and call my daughter hither.
Am I to have an ape for a son-in-law?
Mr. Bertram speaks so quick as to be unintelligible.
At length the Count and Baron bowled, their footsteps homeward bended. For why? Because, as you were told, the hunting it was ended.
Mr. Crawford is to be found pressing Mariah's hand to his heart as they practice their words. And Fanny watches with a rising distress, which she cannot quite explain, as Edmund and Mary rehearse their parts flawlessly.
What is the subject?
Love.
Come then, teach it me. Teach it me as you taught me geography, languages and other important things.
You misconstrue. You misconceive everything I say or do. The subject I came to you upon was marriage.
A very proper subject from a man who has taught me love.
I love you more than life. Oh, Amelia, had we lived in the golden times which the poets picture, no one but you. But the world is changed. Your birth and fortune make our union impossible.
Edmund! Mariah! Fanny! My father has come!
What?
He is in the hall at this very moment. Quickly! Quickly! He is here!
Quick, hide the coffin.
Sir Thomas Bertram's unexpected return from the West Indies has interrupted the preparations for the theatricals at Mansfield Park. And Fanny Price is trembling with fear at seeing her uncle again.
Here she is, Fanny, my own dear girl.
Sir Thomas moves forward with a kindness which astonishes Fanny. She does not know how to feel or where to look. His manner seems changed. And all that had been awful once in his dignity is lost now in tenderness.
I am very well, sir. We are all well.
Good. That is good.
We must take tea directly.
And so it was that I came directly from Liverpool, having made my passage in a private vessel.
And how do you think the young people have been amusing themselves lately, Sir Thomas?
My dear Mrs. Norris, I cannot imagine.
They have been acting. We have all been alive with acting.
Indeed. And what have you been acting?
Oh, they will tell you all about it.
The weather, sir, has been incessant rain since October began. I've hardly taken out a gun since the beginning of the month.
My goodness.
For the present, danger is over, and Fanny's sick feelings subside. But it is not long before Sir Thomas rises.
Well, I must go to my study, but I shall return to you all directly.
Where are the Crawfords? Did we not leave them in the theatre?
I believe they have returned to the parsonage.
Then Yates is all alone in Father's study.
Oh, I warned you of the danger, did I not?
Yes, Edmund, you are always right as you see it, and I am always wrong.
So, yes, when he seized me by the breast, a child might have overpowered him.
Sir Thomas, forgive me. John Yates, sir, at your service. I was just rehearsing, preparing my part as the Count in our theatrical performance. A wonderful play, Lover's Vows. We have been quite taken over by it these last few weeks. These are the scenes from the alehouse. We allowed ourselves but 4 scenes to drop down, even though the play itself demands more. Excuse me, sir. Your arrival was unexpected.
It would seem so.
He is coming.
I had not the smallest suspicion of your acting having assumed so serious a character.
My friend Yates brought the infection from Ecclesford, sir, and it spread. Probably from your having so often encouraged that sort of thing in us formerly. It was like treading old ground again.
Now, Mr. and Miss Crawford were mentioned in my last letters from Mansfield. Do you find them agreeable acquaintance?
I do not say he is not gentlemanlike, Sir Thomas.
Mr. Rushworth?
But I feel I should tell you that he is not above 5'8" in height, or you might be expecting a well-looking man.
I see.
And forgive me, but I am not so fond of acting as I once was. I think we are a great deal better employed, sitting comfortably here amongst ourselves and doing nothing.
Well, I'm happy to find our sentiments on this subject so much the same.
Fanny watches as Mariah, far from enjoying her father's praise of her chosen husband, savours still the sensation of her hand pressed to Henry Crawford's heart.
Sir, I wish to tell you.
What is it, Edmund?
As to the theatricals, we have all been more or less to blame, every one of us. excepting Fanny. Fanny is the only one who has judged rightly throughout, who has been consistent. Her feelings have been steadily against it from the start. She never ceased to think of what was due to you. You will find in her everything you could wish.